Try Therapy Notes, the number one rated electronic health record system available today. With live telephone support 7 days a week, it's clear why Therapy Notes is rated 4.9 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot and has a 5-star rating on Google. Therapy Notes makes billing, scheduling, note-taking, and telehealth incredibly easy. And now, for all you prescribers out there, Therapy Notes is proudly introducing ePrescribe. Try it today with no strings attached and see why everyone is switching to Therapy Notes, now featuring ePrescribe. You can get 2 months free by using promo code CHAT at therapynotes.com. Trauma Therapist Network is a website to learn about trauma and how it shows up in our lives and to find a trauma therapist. Go to traumatherapistnetwork.com to find a trauma therapist near you today. I'm talking with more and more people about how perimenopause is really getting them down. Now it's easier to manage menopause symptoms with Hormone Harmony. Hormone Harmony supports hormonal balance and regulation, relieves symptoms of menopause, supports cortisol, estrogen, and progesterone levels, improves sleep quality, relieves hot flashes and mood swings. It's not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. So Hormone Harmony isn't just for menopause. Any woman with symptoms of hormonal imbalances can take it, but it's perfect for those horrible menopause symptoms that put a woman's life on hold. Hot flashes and night sweats, racing thoughts and low moods, poor sleep and feeling tired all the time, occasional bloating and gas. Yeah, Hormone Harmony can help with all of these things. For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code CHAT at checkouts. That's happymammoth.com and use the code CHAT for 15% off today.
Therapy Chat Podcast, episode 454.
This is the Therapy Chat Podcast with Laura Reagan, LCSWC. The information shared in this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health professional. And now, here's your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC.
Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and I'm very pleased to be bringing you a really interesting conversation about a form of psychology or a segment of psychology that I didn't even know existed until now. And I'm really grateful that I was able to learn about it from my guest. My guest today is Dr. Julie Bindemann. Julie Bindemann graduated from George Washington University, and she's the co-owner of the practice Integrative Therapy of Greater Washington, private psychotherapy practice located in Rockville, Maryland. As a result of her own reproductive story, she pursued postgraduate training in the field of reproductive psychology, and she actively writes, lectures, and presents on the topic. Dr. Bindemann has been on several committees for the Mental Health Professional Group of the American Society for Reproductive Medicine, including serving as chair of the Continuing Education Committee and a past chair for the Social Media Committee. And she's a member of the Anti-Racism Task Force. Dr. Bindemann currently serves on MHPG's Executive Committee and served as a board member of the Maryland Psychological Association for over 10 years. She's a recent past co-chair of the Legislative Committee. Additionally, Dr. Bindemann was the inaugural Early Career Psychologist Committee Chair for MPA. She's been on other boards, including Rainbow Families, NARAL, Pro-Choice Maryland, Uprooted, and JCADA, and was on the fundraising committee that brought the Jewish Fertility Foundation to Washington, D.C. We had a far-reaching and fascinating conversation about what reproductive psychology is, why someone might want to work with a specialist in reproductive psychology, and much, 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 much more. We talked about reproductive rights, the patriarchy, the impact of some of the current anti-reproductive rights laws, and the potential for losing the right to make choices over reproductive decisions and how that impacts people around the country and everywhere. So this is a really interesting conversation, very important. And I am so grateful to Dr. Julie Bindeman for spending time with me talking about this topic, which we both care so deeply about. So let's dive right in. Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and today I'm very excited to be speaking with Dr. Julie Bindeman. Julie, thank you so much for being my guest on Therapy Chat today.
I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yes, I'm so happy that we're making this happen too. And I'm really interested in speaking with you about a topic that we haven't covered in this way before on the podcast, which is reproductive trauma. And before we get into talking about that very important subject, can you tell our audience a little bit more about who you are and what you do?
Sure. So I call myself a reproductive psychologist. I guess if I'm falling within the rules, I am a clinical psychologist that is licensed in DC, Maryland, and Virginia, as well as a part of SciPac. I am the co-owner of a practice called Integrative Therapy of Greater Washington, and we're located in Rockville, as well as virtually. And my specialty, which I kind of fell into, is reproductive psychology. So within that field, most of what I deal with is actually reproductive trauma, which is why I'm like, oh, we should talk about this, because nobody necessarily conceptualizes reproduction as a potentially traumatic endeavor. And yet it is for so many people.
Mm-hmm. And I think on the show I've talked with people a little bit about loss, and I've talked about perinatal mental health with guests, but the whole concept of reproductive trauma is more of a umbrella encompassing some of those things and much more. Can you tell our listeners what we're talking about when we talk about reproductive trauma?
Absolutely. So I'll situate us in several kinds of different ways, because I think that is useful. And all of this can be used then to describe reproductive trauma. So the first way I'll situate us is, what is reproductive psychology? Because as I said, that's not necessarily a common framing that people tend to hear when they're thinking about mental health professionals. So in terms of a reproductive psychologist, I work with people that are considering getting pregnant. They're trying to discern, is this something I want to do or not? Do I want to be a parent? I work with people that have difficulty becoming pregnant. I work with people that have difficulty remaining pregnant. I work with people that have encountered some kind of birth trauma. And I work with people that are encountering difficulties adjusting to being parents. So there's this whole spectrum where there's a lot of different things that can happen. And I think where these things can be considered to be traumatic is that these are all disruptions, and they tend to be disruptions in what is considered to be a reproductive story. So here's a second way that I situate this. The idea of a reproductive story was formally coined by Dr. Janet Jaffe, and how she spoke about it is this idea that every human being has a reproductive story. That story originates when we're children and we start thinking about the ways that we play. And I don't mean the stereotypical girls play with dolls and they play family and that kind of thing, although certainly that could be a part of it. But it's really how children explore themes around nurturance and protecting and safety. And they all do that in their play. And so building upon those kinds of themes, they might start thinking about, when I become a grown up, this is what I want my life to look like. And for some children, the idea is, I want to have 14 children. And that's what it's going to be. And, you know, for a 5-year-old, 14 children seems really understandable and realistic.
Fun.
And fun, right? So many people to play with. For other people, as they as they grow up, they might have the idea of, I don't want any children. And that can be for a myriad of reasons. Like, I don't really like kids, or it could be, I did not have a great childhood and I don't want to potentially perpetuate that onto somebody else. So, and of course, lots of other things too, but those tend to be the two common ones I tend to hear. What then tends to happen is, as we continue to grow up, that 5-year-old who wanted 14 children becomes a 18-year-old and is like, huh, 14, that's a lot. That's expensive. I might not be able to do that. Maybe 3. And so, okay, cool. That reproductive story has already been edited. If that person finds a partner that they might be able to reproduce with without any assistance, now we're talking about, well, what did that partner's reproductive story mean? And what did that look like? And then how did the two people negotiate what we might have? So if one person came, I want 3 kids, the others, I want 2 kids, we need to negotiate. Well, what is this going to look like? Where the reproductive story gets really disrupted is when it doesn't go according to plan. So that might be, well, we've already decided that we want kids and I found the partner and I've done everything right. And I waited when I was supposed to wait and I stopped taking birth control and I'm not getting pregnant. And it's supposed to be easy and it's not happening. And so why isn't this happening? And so that kind of disruption or that interruption of plans, or I'm getting pregnant, but I keep on having miscarriages and none of my friends are having miscarriages. And so that too, disruption of plans, that's more than just a disruption, but just for the case of theory, I'm speaking about it in that kind of way. And all other kinds of circumstances as well. And one of the things I tend to notice is that for most couples, this is the first difficult thing that they've had to encounter together. And there's always grief that's associated with it. Even if we're talking about infertility, there's grief associated with, well, this isn't happening the way we expected it to happen or on the timetable we expected it to happen. And with pregnancy loss, there might be grief around not just the pregnancy's loss, but also what this means in terms of a timetable. Well, I was initially pregnant with my friend and we were going to have kids the same age. And now I had a loss and she's still pregnant and that can't happen. And so there's other kinds of grief that get associated with these types of plans going awry. And so that's the second place that I like to situate things, so that this all results then in the idea of reproductive trauma, because we are talking about a disruption of plans, things that might have been biologically based that also have an emotional toll. And I think what becomes really hard is these are things that are hidden because they're considered to be bedroom activities. And so we really don't talk a whole lot about it. More recently, we've started to talk about postpartum issues and to an extent pregnancy loss. And I think a particular kind of pregnancy loss is really in the news a lot right now, just because of what is happening around the United States after the Dobbs decision. So we're really starting to talk and to see in very graphic kinds of ways that reproduction isn't this safe thing that we like to think about where there's no complications, you just get pregnant and 9 months later you have a baby. But it's this really complex process that at any point something might happen. And that's a really scary kind of tumultuous thing to have to go through, even to the extent now where I have clients who are discerning, do they want kids? And they're starting to think about other kinds of challenges that we face in our world and deciding, is this a world I want to bring kids into? And that becoming this existential question for them, because their reproductive story might have always been, I see myself with kids, but then having this reality of, I don't know that this is a world that I would like to bring kids into. And so really having to process that and the potential grief around that as well.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that description. And there's a couple things that you said, which I want to ask you to go a little deeper into. I mean, one is with what you mentioned about the Dobbs decision, which overturned Roe versus Wade. the law that made abortion legal throughout the United States. Are you, when you said there's a particular type of loss, I guessed that what you might have meant is people who are forced to carry pregnancies to term where they mother or baby's life is at risk.
Possibly.
Is that what you were talking about?
So talking about abortion, where the overwhelming response for people that seek out abortion care is relief. So those that choose abortion, overwhelmingly 95% is what we're finding in research, feel relieved that they were able to make that choice. That being said, there's still 5% that aren't feeling relief, that are feeling a lot of complicated other kinds of feelings. There's a sub-stack in that group of people who have terminated for medical reasons. So this is a wanted pregnancy, and whether it's fetal anomaly or threat to the pregnant person's health, the pregnancy needed to end in order to potentially protect the person who was carrying. So that's the one side of it. The other side of it is we also know from research what happens when someone has to carry a pregnancy to term, whether it's healthy or unhealthy, and they don't wish to do so.
Particularly
the unhealthy pregnancy is that's really difficult if that is not what the desire would have been for parents, but that is being imposed by the state.
Yeah, but you're pointing out that there are also, of course, I don't know why this didn't occur to me in the conversation. I'm certainly aware of it outside of this conversation, that there are people who are forced to carry babies and deliver who did not want to be pregnant.
Correct.
Yeah.
And we're seeing that now more and more. So it I look at it, and this is, I made this comment a couple of years ago at the American Psychological Association. I was on the main stage and we were talking about abortion. And the way I framed it was, this is state-sanctioned trauma. That when we have restrictions like this, it is the equivalent to state-sanctioned trauma. And we know that from our research. So that's not just me trying to be, ooh, let me get a cool line out there. But we actually know that from our research.
Just taking a moment with that. Yeah, it's just such a...
It's heavy.
You know, I just want to say to everyone who's listening, I'm sorry I haven't thought about this, but I haven't thought about, as a therapist, just how many people, I've thought about the effects of Dobbs, people trying to get abortions and the things that people have to do and the experience of birth. I haven't thought about, this is why I'm saying I'm sorry I haven't. I haven't thought about the long-term impact of being forced to do that over one's whole life.
Yeah. And it's not just that individual who birthed, but we're talking too about intergenerational impact as well. So what is the impact on existing children, on that child, on potential future children? What are the lost opportunities? Because this is a parent who had to tend to other needs than what might have been planned. And all of these things are laid out really well in this landmark study called the Turnaway Study. So I love to direct people to it. I had nothing to do with it, but I am such a fangirl of it. It is some of the best research that we have on abortion, because previous research on abortion tried to compare people who had abortions and people who had miscarriages. And those are two really different experiences. So it's like comparing apples to pineapples. They're both fruits and they have apple in their name, but otherwise nothing similar. Whereas the Turnaway study looked at people who wanted abortions and looked at those that were able to access abortions and compared them to people who were turned away. So that might have been because of gestational limits that they were turned away. Typically that was the reason that they were turned away. And then longitudinally looked at both of these groups, people who are able to access abortion care and people who were not. And over a 10-year period, were able to look at what happened to them. And not just what their emotional experience was, but also what is the impact to it? And there is this huge economic impact to people that typically identify as women, but not necessarily, who aren't able to access abortion. It might take away educational opportunities that they were planning on. It might take away job opportunities that they were planning on. Certainly, we're talking about childcare costs potentially. It might keep them in a relationship that's a really unsafe relationship. So there's all these different costs that people might make because the state denied them something.
That's the economic costs.
Right. That's just economic. Like that's not even going into this. But when we're talking about economics too, it means, okay, what are the resources that future children or existing children are able to have? What are the time, the emotional resources, the financial resources that they're able to have as well? And so we see, you know, that those diminish as well. When we actually look at the woman who was Jane Roe, and there's a wonderful book that's called A Family Roe, and it's an American, it's A Family Roe : An American Story. And it really takes a look at Norma's history. And she's the third generation of people who had children because there weren't any other options. And so when you look at just the intergenerational trauma within this one particular family, you know, that they were stuck in poverty, that they weren't able to get a lift out of it, that choices were being taken away from them. So it's just really interesting in terms of looking at this person who represented so much and then looking at what she embodied in them and looking at research and it really clearly showing she is an exemplar of what the research bears out.
Okay, so for the Turnaway study, I'm going to make sure that we can put a link to that in the show notes and any other resources that we can for people to learn more. Because I think what I'm realizing as I'm talking to you about this is how encapsulated my thinking about reproductive rights is into the political aspect of it without as much as, despite being a trauma therapist and a trauma survivor and a person who's impacted by these laws, that, you know, I've been really focused in just like the part that feels like you can do something to change it, which is the political aspect. But and maybe that's just because the gravity of, you know, I feel so passionate about it anyway, but the gravity of just how damaging these laws are to our whole society.
Well, the extent too, because if you take abortion at its sort of natural conclusion, then we're talking about something called personhood. And Louisiana is a fabulous example of personhood because they've had a personhood law on their books since the early 90s. And basically what Louisiana says is that starting from the embryonic stage, an embryo is a person and they are afforded all the rights that a person is afforded. So it means that if, and this doesn't happen so much anymore, that you can't really cryopreserve embryos in Louisiana because if for whatever reason there was a lab error, if for whatever reason, you know, you decided
to implant all the embryos,
all any of these things that can come up, or even just the idea of, okay, our family is complete. We don't need the rest of them. You can't discard. It's a crime to discard. So it means that people who are doing IVF in Louisiana, they might be able to get initial workups done there, but most, if they're able to do so, will go to other states in order to be able to cryopreserve potential embryos. So that's, you know, again, astronomical. Not everyone can do it. IVF already is not covered uniformly across the United States. That's a whole other thing. But when we're thinking about, too, who gets to decide who starts a family and how they start a family, personhood and these other kinds of access, insurance access laws really do come into play because it does limit who can have a family, how they can have a family, and what families we think are okay to have. And so think about, like, again, if we're going back to the reproductive story and all someone's ever dreamed about was having a child, and for whatever reason, they're unable to have a child and they need some kind of reproductive technology in which to have that child. And they're not able to access a clinic, access care, get to care. Imagine the trauma of that. It's not that I don't want this. It's that this is being, this is not being, I'm not able to access it.
Yeah. The gatekeeping and who gets in and who doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. Ever feel like you're too busy to eat healthy? Meal kits from Sunbasket are the perfect solution. We love Sunbasket recipes we receive, like salmon farro bowls with spinach and green goddess dressing. Tonight, we're having shrimp tikka masala. Sunbasket is convenient. Everything is pre-measured, pre-portioned, and easy to prepare. Plus, Sunbasket meals are dietitian approved, so you can feel confident that you're putting a healthy and delicious meal on the table. Sunbasket makes it easy and convenient to cook healthy, delicious meals at home. Try it for 4 weeks and see how Sunbasket can change the way you feel. It's easy to customize recipes to meet your exact needs. Sunbasket empowers you to eat your best your way. They even have pre-made meals, delicious single-serving meals that are ready to eat in less than 5 minutes with zero prep or mess. Go to sunbasket.com/therapychat today to save $120 across your first 4 deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/therapychat to save $120 across your first 4 deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Imagine a life without sneezing, itchy eyes, or avoiding your friend's house because they have a cat. Thanks to Curex, allergies are no longer something you have to just deal with. Curex is America's largest online allergy clinic. I'm lucky that I'm the person in my family who has the least allergies, but my siblings and parents have struggled with allergies and needed allergy shots. But I understand they can be debilitating. The good news is allergies can be treated effectively and you can make allergic reactions a thing of the past. These allergy drops are trusted by doctors and backed by science with hundreds of studies from top institutions like Harvard Medical School and the Mayo Clinic. In fact, in Europe, allergy drops are the go-to treatment for allergies. If you're serious about kicking those allergies to the curb, check out Curex. Treatment starts as low as $59 a month, and if you sign up now, you can save 80% off of the $49 sign-up fee. Go to getcurex.com today for this limited time offer. Don't let allergies control your life. Take control with Curex. Go to getcurex.com. That's GETCUREX.com.
Therapists, we've all had that moment. You wake up in the middle of the night. Oh my gosh, did I do my notes? Well, you don't have to worry about that anymore when you use Therapy Notes. Therapy Notes makes it easy to write your notes, get them done quickly, but thoroughly. My group practice has used Therapy Notes for 6 years, and everyone always finds it easy to use. But the best thing is, if you do need help, you can call their customer service number and a person answers the phone. And anytime I've ever had to use it, which is maybe 3 times in the past 6 years, my issue has been resolved easily with a cheerful demeanor in 15 minutes or less. So I highly recommend Therapy Notes. And don't forget, go to therapynotes.com and use promo code CHAT to get 2 free months.
How do you approach how do people find out about the need for reproductive trauma therapy? How do people even know?
Yeah, it's such a good question because I think most of the time they don't. Right? They think, okay, this is something that a lot of people experience, particularly with pregnancy loss. Okay, this is something a lot of people experience. And certainly when I think of people who have had early losses, it's like, well, this is supposed to just be a blip. I'm supposed to get over it. Like, this was God's will, or a lot of other kinds of platitudes that might have been shared with them. And they just find that they keep on struggling. And I think what becomes really hard is it gets framed to them as grief. But when we're thinking about an early loss, such as a miscarriage, the typical timeline people say that others afford them is maybe a month if they're lucky. And that's not in terms of time off work. That's like 2 days if they're lucky. But we don't have a way of conceptualizing grief, particularly with something like pregnancy loss, which is more of a prospective loss versus a retrospective loss. So when we think of retrospective loss, we think of someone that we can share in community and we collectively have a retrospective of that person's life. versus a prospective loss, which is the loss of the possibilities, the loss of the dreams, the loss of the fantasized future that somebody was expecting. So I think that's part of where the trauma comes in, is because we had these ideas, and again, this was interrupted unexpectedly. And so it feels like it's been ripped away. And just even for people who are very aware that these outcomes exist, tend to be really surprised it happens to them. So even those of us that are like, oh yeah, miscarriage happens, we know it's 25% of pregnancies. And if it happens to us, it's like, how did this happen? What did I do? What did I do to cause this? And that too, that becomes a traumatic kind of response, because it's this assumption of responsibility for it. And that tends to probably come from something earlier in life, like the sense of this must be my fault, rather than, yeah, this is a really sad, terrible thing. And sometimes sad, terrible things happen. And just because sad, terrible things happen doesn't mean I made it happen. So just kind of also tying in, like, this is how I tend to see it. Now, I think people find someone like me because a good friend might sit there and be like, hey, noticing this has been really hard for you. While I'm happy to listen, I feel like I can't offer you everything you need. Maybe it's time to see someone. Or even the OBGYN. I mean, I love those OBGYNs where, like, they see something was traumatic during birth and they're like, here are a couple names for you. You're going to want to do this sooner versus later. And I actually really appreciate when they say something like that. It's not always that they do, but I love it when they do, because it plants the seed for someone to come in, versus when they come into me already pregnant in their subsequent pregnancy, they're 35 weeks and they're like, hey, I'm going to have a baby in 5 weeks, but I had birth trauma with my first. So can you fix it? And I'm like, I mean, this would have been great. I'll do what I can, but you're not giving you the most optimal time and space for that either. So those tend to be the common ways for people to find someone like me. I think what becomes really hard is that I did not get my training in grad school. And there are very few programs, if any, that offer this kind of training. So it has to be something that I discovered and that I sought out training for. So it required a lot of detective work on my part. And I feel really lucky that I was able to find, I mean, back before COVID, that there were actually pre-recorded classes that the American Psychological Association had. So that's where I started. I started reading books like Janet Jaffe's book on reproductive psychology. I was able to take a course. I was able to get consultation for a couple of years. I was able to join places like the American Society of Reproductive Medicine that has a mental health group attached to it. Organizations like Pregnancy Loss and Infant Death Alliance and Postpartum Support, Resolve, all these kinds of different organizations, and being able to get different training pieces at different places. But it was really cobbled together, and it took a lot of time. And it's an interesting contrast when I look on Facebook and someone's like, well, I went through infertility and now I want to work with people who go through infertility. And so typically when somebody comes to me and they say that, I'm like, that's awesome. You have lived experience. That is definitely a perspective. It's important, but it's not the end all be all. It's just one perspective. And there's a lot you probably don't know, and you don't know that you don't know it. But instead, what helpful people on Facebook, other clinicians like to say is, oh, you got this. You have the experience. You can do it. And it's like, no. I mean, it's just like the idea of, like, you've experienced trauma, so you're set to be a trauma therapist. It's like, well, also get some distance from your own trauma. Also get some tools that are actually going to be helpful, because one size doesn't fit all, right? So what might have worked for you in your healing is not universally what will work for everyone. So just over time and looking at what I do, and I'm like, oh, there's a lot of trauma in this. I probably should get some trauma training. And so I got specialized trauma training too. And I'm certified in EMDR, and I'm an approved consultant in EMDR, big believer. Gotten trained in brain spotting. I mean, it's just, because you got to have lots of different ways to be able to meet a person where they are. So I feel like now that was my TED talk. But it's an important thing for me in terms of training, because I can't tell you how many people I see that have gone elsewhere and have actually had additional trauma conferred on them from a place that was supposed to be a healing place because the clinician didn't know what they didn't know. And so, you know, saying things that they thought were helpful, like, this was God's plan. I've yet to meet someone that's experienced a pregnancy loss that doesn't have a religious orientation to them that feels comfortable hearing somebody say that. People that have religious orientations do feel, not everyone, but they do feel more comfortable in that. But to take that as like, oh, that's going to be that helpful thing I offer you. No. So that becomes more damage done that I get to help undo.
Yes. Well, I will say about that religious orientation piece that I've talked to many people who are like, I understood why she said it was God's plan. And I kind of felt that was comforting at the time, but it really isn't sitting with me because I don't understand why would God do this. And, you know, so it's like, it is sort of like a way of just trying to sort of shut down the pain that the person's feeling instead of helping them live with it. Because it's
right. Like, it's the listener saying, this is too painful or traumatic for me, so I'm going to give you a Band-Aid because I can't handle it, versus here, let me show up for you and you tell me what you need to tell me. And I'm just going to sit with you and witness. And humans, we're not great at that. We have to be taught that. But also, yeah, there's more than just witnessing in terms of how do we heal from this.
Yeah. Well, one thing I'm hearing is that for those who really are coming from the right place with their own losses and want to help, that's great. And you need specialized training and you need, you know, I think everyone needs trauma training personally. I don't know. I mean, who in the heck are the people who don't have the trauma? I just don't, I've never met them. I don't know where they are. And didn't we all just go through a pandemic?
Oh, but you know, some of us were fine.
Yeah.
No, right. And what reproduction looked like during the pandemic was like its own, you know, absolutely topsy-turvy thing, and talking about like additional trauma, the trauma of isolation when you have a new baby, you know, the trauma of isolation when you're giving birth.
Birthing with alone, with a mask, without somebody, a partner, any companion with you. Oh, and not being able to, yeah, have any, I can't imagine that.
Yeah, not even being able to have like community with other people that have had new babies, where you can sit there and be like, oh, you're not sleeping either. That's comforting to know. It's not just my baby who's not letting us sleep. Cool.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that does go a long way.
Yeah.
So another point that's coming to mind is the idea of these OBGYNs who understand when birth trauma has happened and give a resource. I understand, sure, it's going to be obvious if the baby doesn't survive birth that that's a trauma. But there's so many traumatic things that happen during birth.
Yes.
That oftentimes the birther never even knows, where, you know, they feel the impact, but they don't understand how to describe it to be able to right. say that it was traumatic.
I think what becomes so difficult too is that if someone has a difficult birth experience and what they hear afterward was, but you know what, everyone's healthy and that's what you want, is so negating to trying to piece together what this experience was for you. Because it's like, well, that's great, but I don't feel whole. I don't feel normal. I don't feel like everything's fine and, you know, I should just be happy. I feel like my literal insides have been ripped out. And I think, too, what becomes hard is, you know, we haven't even talked about any kind of obstetric trauma that people might be dealing with from, you know, at the hand of their provider and not consenting for different kinds of procedures. Nor are we even talking about things that might not be seen by providers as trauma, but are experienced by birthers as trauma. And so mm-hmm. there can be a mismatch too in the experience. Like, you know, hey, The person might not have lost pints of blood, but that doesn't mean that the experience wasn't difficult and traumatic.
Yeah, I will say for myself, the two births that I've had were both very traumatic in their own ways. And I did not know to call it that at the time, and nobody else knew. So I was the one that experienced the trauma and my babies, and babies can't speak for themselves. And the fact that, you know, you don't know how to put it into words, you feel that didn't go well. That didn't feel right. But you don't, who do you tell that to? And who do you, I mean, I know now who you could tell it to is a therapist. Yes, and a therapist specializing in this type of trauma. But what you do when you don't have that is, for many of us, I think, internalize, maybe it's something about me.
What did I do wrong?
Yeah. Or why was I not able to feel okay about this normal experience where everything was fine?
Right. What's wrong with me?
Yeah. Yeah. There's something about me. And then I will say another piece that I can relate to is when you are a trauma survivor who's pregnant, that that whole like something being wrong with you idea is a very common experience for people who have childhood trauma. And so I have talked to many people who, for their first pregnancy, they're afraid that, you know, in some way, the baby will show that
the
parent is defective.
Right.
Like I'm broken or I'm bad or wrong or whatever. And so my baby won't be a typical baby.
Well, and also if someone's experienced sexual trauma when they were younger, the experience of birth can be re-traumatizing. And oftentimes people don't even consider or think about it because it's so different. The situation is not the same.
Right.
And yet that feeling of not being in control, of being powerless over your own body, of something happening, of pain, all of those sensations, that body memory kicks in.
Yes. I'm so glad you said that because I want to add to that, that many, many, many people have that experience and they don't identify themselves as survivors of sexual trauma because it's so common for people who've experienced sexual trauma not to call it that. They call it, you know, an unpleasant situation or something that they feel they wish didn't happen or they don't like when they think back on it, but they don't look at it as being a survivor of sexual violence. And then, so, you know, if one does know that that's what happened to them, then they can at least potentially prepare for how birth could activate that trauma. But if they have no idea, then they're not going to understand. Maybe if they had a flashback during birth of the sexual violence, but that's, I don't know, there's a lot going on during birth. I mean, I guess that could happen to, I'm sure it has happened to some people, but I think it can be more of a like just such an overwhelming situation where it just feels like everything is very out of control.
Right.
And you don't really know how to explain it.
Then do they go back to coping mechanisms that might have worked at that time? So are we seeing them dissociate? Right. And then what is that like to those that are around them that might need their participation if they've checked out? They're not here because that's the only way that they can get through this.
Yeah.
And it's really adaptive for the time, but also becomes difficult in other situations.
It creates other problems can create a problem with the baby, with the partner.
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
And themselves.
Absolutely.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought these things up. All of these nuances of this type of work that I think like everything we just talked about, I probably have worked with like 50 different people who would hear, oh, that was my experience, you know, at least. I also feel that the American system of birth is also just kind of an inherently traumatic process.
I mean, there's no reason that this has to be a medicalized process. It's not in most any other country. What's really interesting is that in the U.S., OBGYNs outnumber midwives and other kinds of birth assistants. But if we look at other countries, it's the exact inverse, that there are more midwives than OBGYNs because the OBGYNs are only doing the surgeries if necessary. The midwives are handling the births. The expectation is that, yeah, this is not needing to be a medicalized event.
And we got a long way to go in this country. Ugh.
We do. But no, I feel like there are a lot of good people that are trying to assemble those building blocks.
I guess we won't even really have time to get into it this time, but the piece about a lot of young people who are really feeling ambivalent about bringing children into the world and
feeling like somebody else has taken this from them because it wasn't what they would have desired. So that's, yeah. We'll have to do one next time then, Laura.
Yes, we do. Well, let's end on a note that gives people some hope and next steps. So for a listener who is impacted by any of the types of trauma that we talked about, or any of the specific types of situations or anything like that under the umbrella of reproductive trauma, where do you have any suggestions? I mean, I know they can work with you, but certainly you can't work with every single person in the whole world. Where would you direct people who can't work with you in Rockville or if you're full?
So I think there's a lot of other people that I trust. I would look at directories that are housed by the American Society of Reproductive Medicine. I would look at Resolve has some. The one thing that you're going to want to do is when you find these people, you're going to want to ask them questions. You're going to want to get a sense of like, what kind of training have you had? And if they're just like, oh, I had a course or two, or if they say something like, oh, well, I am perinatal mental health certified, that sounds really impressive. It actually is fairly meaningless in terms of all of that spectrum I've described to you. So I think that's important too, just to know that there are people that are perinatal mental health certified and they're amazing and they're awesome and like they know their stuff, but that designation in and of itself doesn't connote that. I think that, again, important to know.
My experience is that it's not really a trauma focused certification. It's more about the general perinatal mental health, which is very important, but
right,
not and it trauma.
Very general. And it's not inclusive. I mean, in fact, they used to call EMDR an emerging therapy, I think up until like a year ago. And it's like, come on, there's 30 years of research
decades.
That goes along with this. Like, come on. I would go to Emdria if you want someone that is EMDR certified or that is trained in EMDR and ask if they have a perinatal mental health focus. There is a group of us that this is what we know and this is what we do. I'm not saying that EMDR is the be all end all. I mean, I love it, but that doesn't mean that it is what everyone wants or needs. Other places that you can go is particularly if you've experienced an abortion, there is a fabulous directory where people are actually vetted. So I actually really trust this directory and it's called prochoicetherapistdirectory.com. So you can Google that, but that's actually with people that know what they're talking about and can be helpful around that specific situation. I think what becomes hard is that, you know, I try to umbrella what this field is, but a lot of it exists in silos. So it's really needing to be, unfortunately, a really savvy client and having a sense of like, okay, how were people trained? Because a 6-hour training is not going to do it. That's not fair to you. You're not going to get what you need from that.
And then for therapists who want to learn more and get more skills in this area, what would you point people to?
Yeah. So American Society for Reproductive Medicine has some great online modules. I would say that those are very much an overview. I teach a year-long course. I call it Introduction to Reproductive Psychology. And it begins every September. We go September to June. So I'm actually just about to finish up. And it's so bittersweet doing that because I love it. So I am enrolling for that for clinicians. It offers 30 CEs. So you can get that, as well as really having this education. I do consultation groups. I do individual consultation with people as well. And I have a forthcoming book that's going to be published by, that is published by Springer, and it is the Abortion Handbook for Mental Health Professionals. So it is a way of really informing you all about abortion and abortion care and what is typical and what is not, and how to work with it or work with people that are impacted by it, because everyone is impacted by it, just given the Dobbs decision and having abortion now be decided by the states. And it feels like every day there are new things that keep on coming out with this. So the ramifications continue, the ripple effect really continues. And as I said, it's not something that we tend to be taught in graduate school.
When's your book coming out?
In theory, this summer. I have to get a better date from Springer.
Well, I'll try to release this in timing that, you know, aligns with that, because I'm sure that many people listening are going to be very interested. So, Julie, thank you so much for spending some time with me and our listeners today on Therapy Chat. It was so good talking to you.
Thank you so much for having me, Laura. And again, I would love to come back. There's so much more to talk about.
Okay. Well, I would love to have you back. We'll definitely make that happen. But for now, thank you for being my guest.
Try Therapy Notes, the number one rated electronic health record system available today. With live telephone support 7 days a week, it's clear why Therapy Notes is rated 4.9 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot and has a 5-star rating on Google. Therapy Notes makes billing, scheduling, note-taking, and telehealth incredibly easy. And now for all you prescribers out there, Therapy Notes is proudly introducing ePrescribe. Try it today with no strings attached and see why everyone is switching to Therapy Notes, now featuring ePrescribe. You can get 2 months free by using promo code CHAT at therapynotes.com. Trauma Therapist Network is a website to learn about trauma and how it shows up in our lives and to find a trauma therapist. Go to traumatherapistnetwork.com to find a trauma therapist near you today.
Thank you for listening to Therapy Chat with your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC. For more information, please visit therapychatpodcast.com.